Hey everybody, welcome to episode 4 of GRCast. I'm joined in the studio today by Matt.
Hello there.
And Charles.
Hey, hey.
No Dio this week, unfortunately, fellas. He was busy with something else. I don't know what plans he had that he couldn't drop and get here at a moment's notice, but you know how it is.
Greek people.
Yeah, can't trust him, apparently. Anyway, I think we should probably start it off with what you've been playing, as we're known to do. Let's go with Charles this week, since I harassed Matt the last 2 weeks and he complained.
Well, I played Apo and Yo yesterday. It's a really short indie game that just hit PC.
No, I played it on PS3 when it first released. And it had some really, really big issues on PS3. The frame rate was pretty terrible. The jumping was awful for a game based around jumping. So what I really want you to say is that everything is fixed and it's actually as good as it should have been.
Everything is fixed and it is as good as it should have been.
Fantastic.
On a PC, it runs really smoothly. All the platforming and jumping works very well, and it has integrated support for the Xbox 360 gamepad. So if you're playing it with a gamepad, it's just like a regular console platformer. But of course, it's not really about the jumping around, is it?
No, the story was always fantastic. The way it was delivered was always very, very good. It's just that those problems did kind of interfere with the enjoyment of the overall package, I thought.
And for those of you who haven't heard of the game or haven't played it, it's about an abused boy living in a slum in Brazil, and it's his journey through an imaginary magical world where he escapes his abusive father. And in the game, his father is represented by this giant monster that gets angry and violent when he drinks.
And I think I've read that the game is actually based either entirely or loosely on the developer's actual experiences with an alcoholic father? Do you know anything? I mean, is that a fact?
Well, the beginning of the game says there's a message from the developer saying that, you know, he and his brothers and sisters escaped the monster and his father. But the game itself is very surrealistic, so it's not directly based on his life, but I guess more of a fantasy world that he may have created for himself.
And I have to say, the great thing about that game was that the developers had done such a good job in actually creating the world. It felt very kind of Latin, and there was footballs around the place, and the graffiti was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, the graffiti really struck me. And also the fact that your kid could pick up a soccer ball, as we call them in America, and you can just, you know, play with a soccer ball anytime you like in the game, even though it doesn't have any direct gameplay value.
So, Matt, nothing says Latin to you like graffiti and soccer balls.
Shanty dunes and poor people.
Yeah, that's one of the neat features in the game, that shanty towns they're seen from a child's point of view. So they're kind of like huge blocks, and at different point in the game, you can move around real blocks that are on the levels, and that will move around the shantytown blocks that are off in the distance, so you can recreate the city using the power of your imagination.
I did think that when I played it originally on PS3, I mean, this was early 2012, I think, and I did kind of feel that if the PS3 couldn't run this indie game, that it must be on the PS3 must kind of be feeling a little tired now, because although it is an interesting game, there's not a huge amount going on, and the graphics never struck me, apart from the graffiti, as being especially good.
Well, it's a very elaborate world, so I don't know how large the levels are in terms of system processing, but you can spin the camera around and see off really far into the distance. So it might be a question of the levels are designed in such a way that it overtaxed the PlayStation 3's abilities rather than any limitation on the hardware itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. It just did always strike me as an idea that perhaps, I mean, the whole reason the game got made, I believe, is because it got money from, was it called the Pub Fund or something?
That I don't know about, but I will say that the game deserves to be made just because of its storytelling techniques, regardless of any technical issues.
Yeah, I agree. It's a game that's worth looking at least. And now that you've said that a lot of the issues have been gotten rid of, that the game has been polished. I am up for having another look, and I think anyone that was disappointed with the original release probably will feel the same.
Yeah, definitely. On the PC, it's really great that this game has been brought to a wider audience.
I know when it first came out, I was definitely interested when I had read the interview with the developer and everything, and it's so cool to me when a developer takes something that is such a serious topic and they find a way to express it in a way that really I feel like only games can do. I mean, you could watch a film about a little kid who's in a abusive situation with an alcoholic father and everything, but to play it even in a sort of stylized way, it's probably a lot more powerful if they do it right.
Yeah, and it's also a relatively short game, too, so people will be able to play through the entire experience and get the full story in the course of an afternoon or an evening. So, it has a running time of about 3 or 4 hours, depending on how much you explore. And I think that's terrific that you're able to get the entire message from the developer in one easy chunk like that.
Wow, that is cool. That's something I might have to check out now, actually. Huh. I'm looking forward to it. Great. I'm always looking for more games to play, even though I have a million I should be playing anyway. Well, what else? Have you been playing anything else, Charles?
Yeah, I played Shoot Mania Storm.
How did you find that? Because I played it when it was in beta. I reviewed it months and months and months ago now. And I absolutely loved it. It was so simple. It felt retro almost. And it stripped back the genre so much that I didn't think that it would work as well as it does.
Yeah, it's definitely retro. If you're an old school shooter fan who remembers the days of Quake 3 Arena or Unreal Tournament, back when you'd have the rocket arenas or you'd set up custom matches where everybody starts with just the same gun and the same abilities, it's very much like that, where it's a completely competitive online shooter. There's no pretense at a story, there's no campaign, there's not even a tutorial. And players are thrown into this, and your weapons don't have much ammunition, so you've got to aim and shoot really precisely and lead your targets, and you don't have regenerating health, you don't have a lot of the new features that have been added in over the last decade, so it's a really really refined experience using the best of the way things used to be done without any of the new fancy additions that we're seeing in the last 10 years.
Now, I don't think I've ever even heard of this game, but is it, with the stuff you just mentioned, is it more like a sort of really hardcore game where you're just running around and you're picking your shots very carefully and you've only got so many bullets to get the job done or whatever, and if you screw up, it's like, okay, well, I'm my whole team is screwed now.
Well, your ammunition replenishes slowly, so it's the kind of game where you have technically infinite ammunition, but you can only fire 4 shots at a time before you'll need to pause and then slowly regenerate. And some matches will have different kinds of guns. One only fires a single shot, and you better make it work. And so it is super hardcore for, the big-time shooter fans that really want that competitive experience. And since it first appeared in beta, there have been a bunch of new modes added to it, and there's new maps. So if you grab it now, in fact, since it launched a week ago, there have been a couple of new modes added. So they're slowly building up new things to do in it, adding in new levels, new game types, entirely new modes and weapons, too.
With that said, I mean, you both used the word hardcore, and to a certain extent, I think that's true, but it didn't feel necessarily like you needed to be a great shooter player to enjoy it. It felt very kind of casual as well.
Yeah, everybody is forced on the same level. So as long as you can take a couple of hours to learn how the game plays and change your playing style to match it, you don't have to be a really experienced Twitch game player. You can come in with not really a casual player, but you can be less experienced in shooters and still have fun just shooting a couple of people or trying to. And there's also a terrific map building system. It's, an idiot can learn how to use this thing in 10 minutes. So you can create your own little maps to run around in. And if you're a more advanced player, there's a scripting system. And when you create your own game, you can add in your own custom features to it and then share this with the whole community.
How do you think something like this would compare to like a Counter-Strike as sort of a game that people might play as the competitive, like, professional gamer's game.
Well, this is very clearly intended to be the competitive game. They've already been doing tournaments. And in fact, when I was at PAX East a month ago, they were doing a live tournament there, even before the game was released. So this is, you know, it's intended to be the new Counter-Strike, or, you know, the new specifically competitive game.
Nice. That's awesome. And you said, where do you pick this up? Just something downloadable?
Yeah, this is exclusively for PC and exclusively downloadable now.
Yet another game I might have to check out. This is why we shouldn't do this. Every week I'm in here going, okay, well, there's another game I want to try. Another game I'm going to have to play sometime. I'm still playing games that are like 10 years old that I've played multiple times before.
I've heard good things about the original Halo.
I hear you can only carry two guns in that game, man. Forget it.
What?
Speaking of only carrying two guns, you started playing a little bit of Infinite, didn't you, Charles?
I did just start playing Infinite, and now you're telling me I can only have two guns at a time? Spoilers, damn it! Yeah, but you know, I am maybe 40 minutes into BioShock Infinite, so I'm feeling like a complete rube as I'm walking around, and you know, it's like I'm trying to savor the experience rather than just bang through it to find out what happens. And so I'm just wandering around Columbia, you know, listening to everything I can and, you know, clicking on all the objects I can find just to see what's going on. And there are barbershop quartets singing what sounds like Beach Boy songs. I think something's up there.
you're playing that game the right way, I would say. Like, there are plenty of people who, I think I was on a GameFAQs forum or something for it, where people were talking about doing their speed runs and, oh, I managed to beat the game in 7 hours. I just ran straight through and I didn't talk to anybody. And I thought, why are you doing that in this game? Like, if that's just what you like to do, fine, I guess. But the whole idea of speed runs at all, but especially in a game like BioShock Infinite, seems so pointless to me.
Yeah, as critics, sometimes we need to make that deadline where you've got to beat the game so fast that you can still write your article and get it in on time. And, you know, I have a tendency to, you know, try to beat the game rather than experience the game and savor it.
I think there are some games that I have to specifically just ahead of time say, I will not be reviewing this game because I absolutely refuse to race through it. Meanwhile, I have upcoming Dead Island Riptide, and I don't really care if I race through that game. I'm just going to shoot every zombie that moves, I'm going to watch their head explode, I'm probably going to laugh about it, and then I'm going to write a review after, you know, slamming through as many zombie faces as I can.
Yeah, you'll probably have about 40,000 zombie faces, even just with a speed run through it.
That sounds right up my alley, actually. I give it an 11 out of 10, preemptively. I've not even seen a picture of it. Charles says I'll love it.
Yeah, I mean, the first one, it was pretty much, you know, it was Grand Theft Auto, Raccoon City. You're just running through this island, chopping up zombies everywhere you go. And, you know, it was a lot like what you said. You run through these basic missions of, you know, go find my necklace, and you just chop up a bunch of zombies with an electric meat cleaver.
I love the priorities in that game. I love that you could walk into a camp covered in blood and with zombie parts hanging out of your hair. And then someone would come up to you and say, well, you know what, I forgot our family photo album. Can you travel to the other side of the island and search for it, please?
And that's when you hear a shotgun, like, racking a shell in noise, and I say, you bet your ass. And I jump in the Jeep and take off, running over 400 zombies on the way. I don't need an excuse to shoot zombies. I do it with no quest line involved. They're just there for the bonus points.
Yeah, but, you know, I had a little hands-on with Dead Island Riptide at PAX East, and, you know, I had a lot of fun with it. It's still a lot like the first game, but, you know, there's not necessarily anything wrong with Boru killing zombies with your customized weapon.
Right, that's basically what I think you told us a week or two ago, was that it seems like the first one, they've just added a few things, and I thought, yep, I'm okay with that. I'm just a simple caveman. It doesn't take much to please me as far as games are concerned, I think. Speaking of games that are pleasing me right now, though, I've been playing Tekken Card Tournament for iOS. Have either of you heard of this game at all?
I saw the press release the other day, and it seemed it was like really overexcited for the first time ever on iOS. Tekken Card Tournament. And it was just like, no one asked for this game.
I certainly didn't.
Yeah, it's true. Probably it's a game that I can't believe anybody ever thought to make it. But actually, because I'm a guy who likes to take things that are fine the way they are and add cards to them, I quite enjoy it. It's basically, you choose a Tekken character or whatever at the beginning. That's sort of like your character. As far as I can tell, you're not allowed to switch. So I'm not a Tekken person. I saw a skeleton man with a sword, and I thought, all right, this guy's for me.
The bear is awesome.
Yeah. So basically, the game works. It's almost like a more complicated version of Rock, Paper, Scissors, where the round starts. You have your deck that you have made or whatever. You have a 5-card hand sitting there on the screen, and it shows the two characters standing across from each other just like, you know, any 2D fighting game or whatever. And then you have two choices. You can either focus, which allows you to draw one card into your hand. You can strike, which attacks the other person with all the cards in your hand. Or you can block, which blocks the first two cards in the other person's hand. And so then you have to sort of, you're focusing as many times as you want to try and draw, I mean, as many cards as you wish before you unleash a strike. But you're hoping that they don't block the first two cards. You want to hit them, obviously, with as much attack power as possible or whatever to try and kill them. And they're doing the same thing. If you strike too early and they block, you're starting with 0 cards in your hand again from the beginning, but they might be drawing up to 5, and then they're going to unleash hell on you. It's actually, if you're playing against people, which is, you can play against the computer as like a training thing or whatever, but if you can play against, especially friends, I think would be good. If you were trying to get into their mind and predict what their next move would be. I've had some good fun with it, actually. I've got a review coming. I think it's woefully late at this point, but it is coming. And I enjoy the game a lot. It's pretty cool.
It sounds like Tekken, but for the sort of people that would rather play Risk.
That you have just described me, exactly. If there were exploding zombie heads in this game, 10 out of 10.
I like hardcore fighting games and tabletop strategy games. How can we combine these together into one product that I can carry in my pocket? Someone help!
The thing is, I like the idea of fighting games, but I'm miserable at them. I can't be bothered. I'm not sure I'll ever buy a fighting game again because it's pointless. But this, I can play this. I can draw a card. I know how to play rock, paper, scissors. So this is right up my alley.
Yeah, it's like I can only play fighting games when I'm using a proper stick. And so I've spent the entire last console generation, every time a new fighting game comes out, I buy it, and I'm terrible at it, and I say, that's it, I'm going to go out and buy a $100 fighting stick this time, just so I can play this one stupid game. And then I never do, and I got this stack of 10 years worth of fighting games that I can't play, and they're just sitting on the shelf. So I think this week will be the week that I buy that damn $100 fighting stick.
Just wait until the PS4 comes out, and then the first week, buy the system and buy a fighting stick for it, whatever the first one is available, and that thing will pay dividends over the 8 to 10 year lifespan of that console. You'll be perfect at it.
Clever. But I do have this 10-year backlog of fighting games I've hardly played, so if I get a first-generation Xbox 360 stick, I'll have another decade of fighting games to play with it, just from the ones that are sitting on the shelf. So there's my financial responsibility.
I see.
I'm fantastic at fighting games on easy, and then I make the mistake of trying to play them online. And I usually come across someone with a kind of Japanese name, and they beat me in about 4 moves, and then I never play it again.
Yeah, there are
the
some
crushing
of those
humiliation just makes the game toxic to you.
I think that's a fairly common story. That you just head online and get beaten once, and it's just like, I am so bad at this game. I finished the story, I've played arcade, I've gotten some of the trophies, and then you realize that actually you've just been kind of hammering square all the way through, and that's how you fight in these games. And then there are people out there who can do elaborate moves and who don't just press forward and jump occasionally instead of blocking.
Yeah, I think that's my experience with all fighting games online too. You load it up, this guy comes at you. I don't think my character ever gets to move except to fall backwards after his face gets kicked. It's like I have no control over him. And then that is just beyond frustrating. I can't even bother with it. That's why you shouldn't play like RTS games, Matt. If you're just going to lose anyway, lose in 30 seconds on a fighting game instead of 45 minutes after constructing some grand defense and then watching it fall apart.
I think real-time strategy games should just be a must-play for every person, just so you can learn to think tactically. Even if you're terrible at it, the first couple of times you get suckered into charging headlong into someone's nuclear strike, you know, that's a lesson that'll stay with you through your life. Not that I ever did that in StarCraft.
I agree. I think everyone should be playing turn-based or real-time strategy games. I love them. I've talked, I'm sure, on this podcast about my extreme love for XCOM and how it was the greatest game that released last year. I'm probably the only one who thinks that. But anyway, speaking of getting destroyed online, how's that Dota 2 treating you, Matt, that you're going to have me getting my ass beat with you on soon?
You know, the main reason that I've been looking at that again is because we can play it. Obviously, with your crappy internet, we're limited. But, I mean, I've played it when it first came out, and it seemed like it was everything that the other Dota games, or the other MOBA games, rather, weren't, in that the community was quite nice, and the graphics seemed very kind of, I don't want to say high-end, but certainly higher-end than Heroes of New Earth or League of Legends. And it just seemed like a very smooth experience. And I've played it since, and it didn't last. As soon as the numbers started going up, it all kind of fell apart. But it's still probably one of my favorites, for sure.
I just love the idea of these games.
Yeah, people get addicted to those MOBAs.
They really do. I think it's... I don't know. I don't even... This game came from sort of a... Was it Warcraft 3 that the mod was originally for?
Yeah, the original Defense of the Ancients.
I had friends in high school who that was what they did. They weren't gamers. I mean, they didn't play any games the way you have some people who... They'll buy a 360, and as far as they're concerned, the only games that exist are Madden and Call of Duty. My friend owned Warcraft just because of Defense of the Ancients. I don't think he knew anything about Warcraft. He had probably never played the single player or any other type of map. That was just the Defense of the Ancients game to him.
But you know, this was at least true when I was writing about it 12 months ago or whatever, but that game, Warcraft 3, is still one of the most pirated games because of Defense of the Ancients. It's still getting updates.
Yeah, there is still a massive community out there that are playing this game. And boy, do they love having new players stop in to see how it goes.
I was just on the Dota 2 website there, and I think my jaw dropped a little bit when I saw the characters page, because there is like, 40 of them or something? It's absurd.
But you know, I mean, I've played a lot of MOBA games through my work at Devil's MMO, and there just isn't a huge amount of variety to it. You know, even the maps are pretty much identical from game to game. Because it all came from this one mod, it has just kind of... It hasn't really grown. It's just the graphics have improved and the balance has improved. And that's about it. You can go to any game, and how much you enjoy it basically depends on the community.
That's a lot of online games.
I found
games,
that the League of Legends. I found that the League of Legends players tend to be the friendliest of the MOBAs that I've tried. What have you guys found with that?
I always felt that League of Legends is huge, kind of in East Europe, and I tend to find that communication isn't great until you are being insulted by someone. And I found Heroes of New Earth was better than that for the community, and then Dota 2 was better than Heroes of New Earth at the time, but I couldn't tell you now.
I've played League of Legends and Heroes of New Earth, and I thought Heroes of New Earth was worse. I disagree with Matt. For League of Legends, I didn't really have that many problems, I mean, any more than you'd expect. It wasn't as bad as listening to random people in the, just with a random group on Call of Duty on Xbox Live or whatever, so... Anything that's better than that, I give it sort of a win. Recently, I was trying to figure out, what MOBA games can I play? My internet connection's not great, but, like, I can play MMOs and stuff without a too much hassle. I think I have like a 600 millisecond lag or whatever, which obviously isn't grand, but it's less than a second. I don't think it's that big of a deal. So it was, I posted on one of their forums, I said, will I be able to play this game with any degree of success if I have a 600 millisecond delay or whatever? Like, will I be able to play the game? I don't have to be the world's greatest. I just want to play it. And the response I got from almost everyone was, yeah, yeah, you'll be great. Just don't be on my team. So,
well, there's a MOBA called Awesome Knot.
What is it?
There's a new MOBA called Awesome Knots that came out maybe a year ago, where it's a 2D side-scrolling game that uses the MOBA gameplay concepts.
Awesome Knots is fantastic. I mean, it depends what you're looking for, really, because Awesome Knots is fantastic as a kind of beginner MOBA, because there's not much to it. Other than the basic concept, there's not much of it that feels very MOBA. But if you're a console gamer or someone just starting out, the Guardians of Middle-earth, the new Lord of the Rings one, is a full PC MOBA but made for consoles, and they've done such a good job of transferring it. It's a shame that there's some lag issues and all sorts with it. But aside from that, either Awesome Knots or Guardians of Middle-earth are definitely games that are worth checking out on consoles.
I tried both of those, and because my internet connection's so bad, and probably because, presumably, they don't have dedicated servers for either of those games, it was just impossible. I would get into a lobby or whatever, and everybody'd be ready, and then as soon as they all went into the game, it would just boot me right back out, so that was kind of disappointing.
It helps from when I was playing Guardians of Middle-earth. That was pretty much the game anyway.
Speaking of mobile games, so that it came out a couple years ago. What was it? It was called Monday Night Combat or something. That was sort of a third-person shooter mobile game.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Famously, everybody in the world seemed to love that game, except for Matt and I, who thought it was absolute garbage.
Yeah, that one never really appealed to me, and I remember it went free-to-play really quickly after a commercial launch.
Yeah,
there's
so
a couple of games
we
now.
Were
right. Yeah, who saw that coming? There's a couple of different games. There's Monday Night Combat, and then there's Super Monday Night Combat. And Super Monday Night Combat is the free-to-play version on Steam. And I think actually Monday Night Combat might have been... It came out on Xbox, and then I think it came out more recently on PC. Although I'm not 100% sure on that.
Well, people should just be playing like Dota 2 anyway, right? I mean, is that sort of the consensus for MOBA games? Now that Dota 2, it seems to have been playable for longer than I realized, but was there a lot of people who were like, okay, I've only been playing League of Legends or Heroes of New Earth because Dota 2 wasn't available, so now I'm out of here.
League of Legends took over from World of Warcraft as the most played PC game last year. So I don't think it's a case of that. I think it's a case of a lot of people have friends that are playing it, so they play it.
Well, whatever works, I guess. Hey, if you like that game, better play it. I was never any good at it. The only thing I liked about League of Legends particularly was that there was a character who was a pirate, and he could call in a strike from his cannons from his boat that was supposedly just offshore. So I was a big fan of that. We haven't really been talking about what you've been playing, man. Why don't you go ahead and regale us with tales of why some games aren't as good as we think?
Yeah, I've been... I was happy for people to carry on talking because it meant that I could avoid this, because I've kind of been dreading it. Anyone that's listened to these podcasts or that listened to the NSG podcast back in the day knows that I didn't play Bioshock until very, very recently, and I finished it last week. And, you know...
Would you kindly share your opinions with us?
Ah, thank you.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, first off, it's important to kind of say that there was less of the game spoilt for me than I thought. I was still aware that Andrew Ryan would end up as fish food. I was also aware that the phrase, would you kindly, was important enough that it stuck out when it was said. But there were things throughout the game that I felt weren't as strong as people perhaps give them credit for. Firstly, the fact that Atlas was Fontaine was the most obvious thing ever. There's a audio recording as you go into the fisheries that says something like, Fontaine, he always strikes from the shadows and no one really sees him and blah, 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 and he might be dead and he might, the rumor is that he's getting other people to do his bidding. And I thought there's one character that we've met so far that has lasted more than the time it takes you to kill them. And that was Atlas. And he was getting you to do his bidding from the shadows. And I felt by finding that that audio recording, it seemed so obvious that Fontaine was Atlas. So that twist was kind of lame. But the one that everyone gets on about is the would you kindly thing, which I described to Joe yesterday as a mediocre twist disguised as a great twist, because the production of that actual part of the game was very, very good. It's shocking when you finally meet Ryan, because he's been the kind of dark overlord throughout the game, and then you finally get there and you find out that he is just a man, which considering the themes in the game was impressive. But then I actually sat and started to think about the would you kindly, that he's been brainwashed, and that the idea that everything you've done in the game so far has been a result of this phrase. And it doesn't really hold up, because it's a video game. And what I mean by that is that Rapture is a very linear place, filled with people who want to kill you. There's no other option. So the fact that Atlas said, step off, would you kindly, whatever, pick up the radio, would you kindly step off the bathysphere at the beginning, the fact that these things happened because that was how the game progressed. There was no other option. And I feel that if perhaps the developers could have shown an alternative that actually, oh, there was other paths, but you were too brainwashed to see them, or some of the people that you attacked weren't actually attacking you. It was just that you'd been brainwashed to think that actually they were the bad guys, that perhaps the twist would have worked better. In actuality, you were just surviving. You were just moving forward, because the alternative was turning off the game.
I hadn't thought of about that way.
I think that would have been interesting if they could have included some other stuff like that. But I feel like that would have been kind of difficult. How would they have managed that?
It would kind of require actually brainwashing the player yourself.
But that's what bothered me, because the twist is that the character you've been playing as, which, you know, it isn't a character, it's just it's an invisible body and two hands on the screen. The character has been brainwashed, so the player has also, in a way, been brainwashed. The only difference is that you haven't. There's no other option. You do as Atlas said, because Atlas says to do the right thing, and then all of a sudden he's made out to be the bad guy.
Right. Well, I think the reason people like the twist so much in Bioshock, first of all, that moment where you meet Andrew Ryan and he essentially orders you to murder him with his putter was probably the strongest moment in that game or whatever. But it's more of like, in my opinion, just a commentary about why we do things in games at all. Like, in every game, you just wake up somewhere or whatever, and they're like, okay, go here and do this, and you never question it. I mean, like you said, the other option is turn the game off, which is a pretty shitty option. But really, in games, it rarely occurs to you to say, am I doing the right thing here? Why am I doing this? And Bioshock sort of answered that, well, you're brainwashed, you have to do it.
But you know, again, I mean, I've kind of sprung this on you guys, so I've had longer to think through what I'm trying to say. So I was thinking of Metal Gear Solid 2. You play as Raiden, and you go through the big shell, and then you get to the end, and the Colonel starts obviously acting very oddly. And that bit for me was doing exactly the same thing as what they were trying to do in Bioshock. The only difference being that when you played back through Metal Gear Solid 2, there were threads that you could kind of see something was going amiss, that there were similarities to Shadow Moses, and that in Bioshock, if you play it again, all you really pick up on is Atlas saying, would you kindly go and kill the Doctor, who was a madman who was torturing splicers. You know, there's no moral qualm with killing someone who is not only a threat to you, but to other people. And if the splicers he was torturing and doing whatever to were actually the splicers from the rest of the game, then they probably have tried to attack you anyway, so there's no moral qualm there.
So here's my question. Do you think you would have liked a twist better if after you became unbrainwashed or whatever, I think this is kind of what you were saying a minute ago, if you had found evidence that, for example, the doctor was not a maniac. He was a guy who had set up in Rapture, and he had the splicers coming to him, and he was trying to help them become normal again, and everything that was crazy about him was just a figure of your imagination due to the thoughts and feelings that Atlas had planted in there. Would you have been like, oh, that's so cool, he was just a guy who was helping and I blew his head off?
Yeah, that's it, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying, because the alternative as it is now is that you were just walking in a straight line, basically. He was going from one area to the other as basically an angel in disguise.
But if you did that, you'd be unwriting all of the interesting ideas that had come throughout the game, that doctor isn't, you know, he isn't deliberately torturing and mutilating people. He's reached a point where he's perfected his art so much that he's become the Picasso of plastic surgery, and he's transcended our puny human notions of what beauty is.
I agree, and I mean, to a certain extent, Joe's kind of stretched what I was saying there into another idea. More, the problem with what the twist means to me is that you have not been acting under your own power, really. You've just been doing as you're told, and that's not strictly true. So for the game to have a twist that tells me that that is true, it's, to me, ingenuine. And yes, it was a very well done twist. But if then we'd gone back to the first area and seen that actually, oh, there are other entrances or there are other ways that you can go, if, or even after you were unbrainwashed, if the world kind of opened up a little more, I'd feel better about it. But as it seems now, it just seems like, okay, I've got this good idea for a twist, let's put it in here.
And of course, by the time you'd played the game, the phrase "would you kindly" had become so omnipresent amongst gamers that you did have a little bit of an inkling of what was going on with that phrase even before you got to the twist.
Well, that's true, but I don't think that really changes anything, because my problem's not with the phrase or with him using the phrase, or even that the twist is that you were brainwashed. My problem is that you weren't brainwashed. My problem is that you were doing exactly what you wanted to do. You weren't going straight to kill the doctor. You were exploring and listening to audio. You were going into the rooms that were available to you. My problem is that Rapture is very, very linear, and that the only alternative is, as I said earlier, to turn the game off.
You know, I'm surprised that I'm not angry at you, because in a way, I sort of agree with everything that you are saying. If you want to play a game that explores similar themes, I wouldn't say they're the same necessarily, but a game that you might like better even with similar themes is actually Spec Ops The Line. I don't know if anybody else has played it, but that game is a sort of mediocre-ish shooter, I guess, but the storyline in that game is just excellent.
You know, I just want to clarify that I didn't not enjoy Bioshock. It is a very, very, very good game. I don't think the gameplay is all that great, and I think if you go on to Bioshock 2, then it just goes to show, I mean, they've changed the controls a little bit, but it just goes to show how much the story drove the first game. I think the world's fantastic, and I think generally the themes and the ideas that are there are very, very strong. I just think that twist, I don't think there's very much like it in gaming, and I think people have so grasped onto it that the idea that it doesn't really hold up has never been discussed very much, or at least not taken seriously by the people that love the game.
Well, from a gameplay perspective, you're saying that you want the character to have a wide open world that they could explore, like Skyrim, but the player would still be forced to go on a linear quest, despite the geography or topography hypothetically letting the character go anywhere he wants.
That's not really yes and no. More that the problem is that Rapture isn't a wide open space. I don't think that the game would have worked if it was. It's no different from Call of Duty or anything else. You walk forward in a straight line, going from one battle to another, and then there's a bit of story in between. Now, the content of that story may be 10 times better than Call of Duty, but you're still doing the same thing. Now, the difference is that when you get to that one part, you're told you're doing these things because you've been brainwashed, whereas that's not true. You're doing these things because there's no other option. Now, I'm not saying there should be other options. I'm saying that the twist isn't as strong as it could be because it's not true.
Here's a question for you. Are you kind of saying that you wish that the twist was something that if you were to go back and play the game a second time, you would get more out of it? Because like with Bioshock 1, you can play it a second time, and I did, and it's neat to see all the times where he says the phrase and then you go do it, and it's like, aha, I was just brainwashed there. But really, that's all there is to it. You're not seeing different angles to things the second time around. Once that you hit that one note a handful of times, and that's that. But is that more of what you're looking for? Like, the first time around, I didn't understand, and the second time, now that I know what I know, it's like mind-blowing to see all these things.
Yeah, that would have helped, I think. I think if, you know, and I'm trying to think of the best way of kind of suggesting how it could have been better implemented without saying that the whole twist should have changed or the whole game should have changed, because basically that's what the problem is. The twist didn't really mix well with the game itself. But I think if it had been deeper in the story, then I would have been probably happier with it. And as I say, it was delivered very, very well, because then you go into, you find the little room that's got it sprawled all over the walls, and then you go into Ryan, and he, as you say, basically commits suicide, and it's a very powerful moment. And I don't want to take away from the power of that moment by saying that the twist wasn't great, but I don't think it was implemented as well as it could have been. I don't think that saying that you were doing something because you were told to is applicable to a game where there's no other choice. If you leave the bathysphere and just stand there, that is the only way that you can not do as Atlas told you to do. And I get what you were saying earlier, Joe, about it's a comment on perhaps the objectives in games. And, you know, that kind of makes sense in a I've analysed it after the fact sort of way. But at the same time, I do think that perhaps when you look at the twist as part of the wider game, it doesn't really stand up to scrutiny. If you sit there open-mouthed and go, that was a great twist, that is the enjoyment you can get out of it, I think. You can analyse the themes behind it, but if you try and look at it as part of the game, it doesn't really work as well.
Well, I have good news and I have bad news for you, Matt. And the bad news is that probably everyone in the world is going to hate you. Like you said, as soon as you criticize Bioshock on Twitter or whatever.
That's fine.
Yeah, they're very frustrated. The good news, however, is that that game that I described to you that you said, yeah, that sounds like that would be better, that game is Bioshock Infinite.
This is what I was saying, though. The first week that I started playing it, and I came on the podcast and said, well, actually, you know what? There are parts of it that aren't as good as people are saying. And it was that there is such a fantastic foundation there that they can only build on it for Bioshock 2 and Infinite. And I have to say that I've played a bit of Bioshock 2 and they screwed it up so badly that Infinite can only look, well, infinitely better.
Well, about Bioshock 2, you should definitely stick with the game, and you should get the Minerva's Den content, because that's another terrific piece of storytelling.
Yeah, I plan to finish it. But, you know, I just want to, when we first, I think it was episode 2, I said that the gameplay in Bioshock 2 wasn't as good. The world was fantastic, but there were problems. And I think that I pretty much stick by that. I think there is an attitude that from core gamers where there's proper games and then there's stuff like Call of Duty. And I think there's a kind of pretentiousness there where you're not allowed to at all criticize these games unless you have bad taste or whatever, and that remains true. I think that the reason that this game, it can't be seen for what it is that people are just so in love with the game itself.
The sacred cow.
Exactly, yeah.
I actually purchased the Ultimate Rapture Edition of Bioshock so that I could have 1 and 2 and all the DLC so I could play that Minerva's Den based on your recommendation, Charles. I haven't had a chance to do it yet, though.
We must discuss on a future podcast.
Okay, I will try to finish it sometime in the next, like, 2 weeks or so we can talk about it, because I would like to definitely get through it and then have a little chat. Well, that's Bioshock for you, friends. Apparently, Matt hates it. he thinks it's one of the worst games. He also hates Red Dead Redemption. I'm just trying to make everyone turn on you. No, I'm not as frustrated as I expected.
I do that myself.
We're just going to edit so that you end up saying it's the worst game ever made.
I'll make it easier. It's the worst game ever made.
Oh, I'm going to use that sound clip for everything when I'm doing promos for any future show.
No, but see, this is what I mean, though. I have not said that it's the worst game ever made. I actually think it's my favorite shooter that I've played this year. I have absolutely loved my time with Bioshock, even though it was a little longer than I thought it was going to be. I enjoyed every single moment of it, but I don't think it's above criticism, and I don't think that it's as perfect as some people would want you to believe. And that goes for Red Dead Redemption as well. Wow, that's going back.
Let's not get started on Red Dead talk. There will probably be a new Red Dead game before we are done arguing about that, so it's best not even to bring it up. But everyone who's listening can expect a promo, or maybe you've already heard a promo, where Matt says, Bioshock, it's the worst game ever made. I will absolutely be doing that.
Oh, wow. I'm going to go nail up my post box and sellotape the windows.
That's probably a good idea. Okay, I know for a fact that Charles wanted to mention Defiance, the new hit TV show from Sci-Fi. Is that correct?
Yeah, the new quote, hit, unquote, TV show. The pilot episode just aired this week. And for people who don't know, Defiance launched as a video game a couple of weeks ago, and then it just launched as a TV show now. The game is sort of a third-person shooter that's also an MMO, and it's set in the same setting and time period as the Defiance TV show, but you create your own original character, and you run around in locations that aren't seen in the TV show. And we've just had the chance to see the TV show this week, and the pilot episode isn't that great.
You know, I didn't expect it to be, because I'm not 100% sure on the story, but the story of the development, but it seems like it's all tried to be a little too tied in, I think.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to take a little bit of everything. The premise is that it's about 30 or 40 years in the future. An alien race came to Earth and accidentally unleashed a terraforming process that's rebuilt the Earth to look like an alien landscape. And humans and the aliens were at war for a few years, but now there's peace between humanity and these eight alien races. And we've just now seen the main human character has become the sheriff of the ruins of St. Louis, and he's raising an alien daughter in this one town that has all of these different aliens in kind of a Wild West setting that's also the future. And so there's, there's elements of Firefly in it. There's also Alien Nation, and one of the creators of Farscape is the executive producer of this. So you can see a lot of influences of Farscape as well. And so, you know, we're getting a lot of things that we've seen before, but all mixed together. And, you know, that's just based on the pilot episode. So maybe it'll change when episode 2 comes or over the course of the first season. But Matt, you reviewed the game a few weeks ago, right?
That's right, yeah. And I've got to say, I mean, one of the things for me that was so amazing about Defiance is that they've done it right. And that sounds really kind of vague, but I've played console MMOs, and I play a lot of MMOs, and they've just managed to make everything work as it should. The skill tree is a little off, but aside from that, it's an MMO on a console, and it's playable, which in itself is such an amazing achievement, and it shouldn't be, but it is. And, you know, the TV show doesn't really enter into kind of even something that I'll probably watch, but the fact that it works as well as it does means that it should at least be tried out, I think, by most people who are interested in such a thing.
Now, I played it on the PC, and one of my problems with the PC version of it is that it's a little too much like a console game. When you bring up certain menus, there's a radial wheel that's obviously intended to work with the analog sticks on a gamepad controller.
It does actually work with the 360 remote on PC, so there is that option there if you want. The little I tried it with the mouse and keyboard, you know, I could see it was meant for consoles. But what I wonder is if it was always planned for consoles and then at a later stage they decided to bring it over. Because you can tell it's a console MMO just by looking at it anyway. The graphics seem like something off the PS3. You can see it there. So I went in expecting that, to be honest. I went in expecting it to be watered down. And I actually said, I can't remember if it was in that review or in some coverage that I'd done earlier, but I remember actually saying at some point that people who expect something along the lines of Guild Wars 2 or, you know, even one of the more traditional MMOs like Lord of the Rings are going to probably be disappointed because there's cutscenes and voice acting and, you know, it's basically a single-player game with other people running around. But for consoles, that works so well that it doesn't really matter. You have to go in with the right frame of mind.
Well, that's becoming the new standard in MMO design. Games like The Secret World and Star Wars The Old Republic, they're heavy with cutscenes and voice acting, and they are a lot like a single-player game where there's a bunch of other people running around, too.
That's true, but I felt more so with Defiance because, you know, you go off into an instance in Old Republic or Guild Wars or Secret World, and you're there with one person or a couple of friends. There's actually a part in Defiance early on where you have to go below a bridge and defuse four bombs, and there was actually four people. There was actually a queue of four people at each bomb waiting for it, and they were just queuing quite nicely waiting to do it because in their game they were the one that was supposed to be defusing the bombs. No one else was supposed to be doing it,
but here they all are lining up to defuse and rearm the same bomb over and over and over again.
That's it, and it is a problem in a way, but at the same time I think that the best way of doing a console MMO, and it amazes me that no one's realized this before, the best way of doing a console MMO is to make it as little like an MMO as possible. And I don't think I've got any real complaints about that. They need to fix the skill tree, though, because that doesn't work in any way.
Yeah, Defiance is one of those projects that I really hope that it comes along in the weeks and months ahead. That the TV show is something that I hope it's going to be good, and I can see potential there if they fiddle with it. And the game launched with a bunch of technical problems, but the gameplay itself is something that, you know, I really think could take off, especially if they start using the storylines from the TV show and the game and bring things together so that you're going to want to tune in every week and then go get the weekly download of something for the game.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. The best thing that this has got going for it in terms of the general public is that it is access to this world, and it's access that nothing else has ever really done before. I can't think off the top of my head anything that's had the TV series, the MMO. You know, there's a great potential for novels or, you know, alternate reality games or whatever. You know, there's a huge scope to really get people interested in this world, and not everything needs to be perfect for that to happen. And that might be a bit of a defeatist attitude. It should all be 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. But they only need to get people interested in the one thing to perhaps get them interested in everything else.
Yeah, there's actually, I'm ashamed to admit that I play this game, but there's a Simpsons iPhone game called Tapped Out. And it's a mindless tapping game, but I love The Simpsons. So I play this stupid game on my iPhone. And, you know, every couple of weeks there'll be a new update for the game that's based on what episode of The Simpsons is coming up. And so I can easily see Defiance mimicking that pattern where each product helps promote the other.
No, I mean, they've announced there is a season pass for it, isn't there, Defiance? So what I'm wondering is how much will be free updates and how much of it will be paid DLC? How much of it they'll put down to advertising and how much they'll put down to the player wanting more content?
Yeah, the developer has said that they are going to have a bunch of free stuff, so right. That's a very positive sign.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, it all ties up very nicely. It's going to get people who wouldn't watch the TV series are now going to watch the TV series, and people who wouldn't have played the game are now going to play the game. And it's perfect, really. And the only thing that you've got to hope for is that everything stays at such a quality that it is worth keep going back to both products.
Yeah, I mean, it is something that I'm gonna stick with in, you know, in the sincere hope that it does turn into something that I'm coming back to just because it's terrific, not because I'm hoping it's going to come together.
Here's my question, though.
Yeah.
I'll ask you one last question before we wrap this thing up. My question is that, do you think in time, 5, 10 years from now, we'll look back and Defiance will be sort of this bizarre footnote that is notable because it sort of launched this idea of you have a TV show or a movie and a game and all this stuff, all sorts of media that tie together in a really specific way? Or do you think it's the kind of thing that people will really stick with? I mean.
I think that when you look at the gaming industry as a whole and the state that it's in, where people are so anti-DLC and anti-advertising, basically they want exactly the same thing that their parents were buying for them 20 years ago. I think that developers and certainly publishers are going to be looking for any sort of option for extra cash. And if they can kind of access this huge untapped potential of people that don't play games by making a movie or by making a TV series, then that will be what they'll do.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely going to stick around. You know, my reference to the Simpsons iPhone game, I think that's going to become a standard where every TV show is going to get some online multiplayer game as a tie-in, and I think that it's going to be more complex, and Defiance is probably going to be remembered as the first really big attempt at this.
Well, I am interested. I know I might check out the show. There's always places I could go and maybe get a little better. The game with my internet connection is probably not going to happen, unfortunately. But I'm interested to see where they can take this idea going forward. I'm sure there's other people, like you say, it will probably just become sort of a standard thing. And if this game acts as like a springboard to get more people interested in bringing more franchises together in ways outside of just the game or just the show or just the comic or whatever, then hey, who can say they're doing something wrong? Well, I think that is about it for us this week. And gentlemen, thank you for joining me in the studio today.
All right, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And that's it for us. We are out.